Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Really about everything you look at is going to be, I'd say, at least 5 to 10% higher for input costs for farmers. And a lot of that just has to do, you know, we're in an era right now of higher inflation than we've seen for a long time. So I think if you pencil in at least 5 to 10% increase in most inputs, I don't think you'd be too far off. And, you know, some things like fertilizer and those things related to fuel are probably going to see even higher increases than that.
Kansas State Farm Management Economist Greg Heibendahl.
So diesel fuels that, you know, most farmers use a lot of that. You can certainly make an argument that fuel and oil prices are tied to fertilizer prices to some degree. So all those things, we've seen pretty good run-ups in price over the last year or two, what they have been, and I don't really see those necessarily going down over the coming year. So anything that takes fuel or fertilizer especially is going to be a big increase for farmers for their input of cost.
This is Agriculture Today.
Another kind of category important to ag and rural communities is addressing the digital divide.
Krista Swanson, University of Illinois ag economist on rural broadband or the digital divide.
Some rural areas are really lucky to have good internet connection, but a lot of the rural areas across the United States don't have sufficient connectivity, or at least not at an affordable price. And so there's $65 billion in this bill that's put towards expanding broadband connectivity and affordability. And that's particularly targeted towards those areas that don't have access or have poor access now. I thought interesting, too, is $47 billion towards protecting against cybersecurity threats. There have been some agricultural companies that have dealt with such threats, and I think we can all understand how significant that could be to the industry if a large agricultural company or organization was targeted by a threat. We've seen what's happened with those in some other industries.
And that's all in the recently passed infrastructure bill, and she says there's actually more for rural America.
Strengthening the electric power grid, which is important to everyone, but definitely benefits rural areas as well. Another category is enhancing water systems. I already went into a little bit of detail on that, explaining how some of those funds were specifically for the western region of the United States. But overall, it's working to improve national water systems. The water infrastructure throughout the country is aging and is in need of repair, and so this would work to address that. It would also provide some new water storage and groundwater storage capabilities and provide some funds for USDA's watershed programs. And then the other thing I wanted to highlight is the expectation of the created job opportunities throughout rural America. Moody's put out a study on this where they estimated that at the peak impact of this bill, which the funding extends over a 10-year period, we would see over 800,000 jobs created at that peak impact point.
Now, speaking of jobs, one area of agriculture that's been hit hard has been the textiles, as many of those jobs have now left the U.S. But with higher cotton prices, could we see that come back? Well, first we have to decide whether or not cotton will take any acres from corn or soybeans in the U.S. Alan Brugler with Brugler Marketing.
The cotton market's definitely been hot here. It's wonderful to get a chance to sell dollar cotton or even $1.20 cotton on the high day on the board. So that's been very attractive to U.S. producers. It's also been attractive to the Brazilians. They have the advantage of having a very weak currency, the real, so that helps them in the export market. The U.S., of course, is very export dependent for cotton. I think the thing we have to remember is it's very attractive for cotton, and if you're a big cotton producer, you're certainly looking at expanding cotton acreage, whether you're Brazil or the U.S. But if you look at the U.S., it still doesn't compete well with corn or soybeans at the prices that they're at. So it depends on your ground and your crop rotation. But I think the cotton acreage expansion, if it's going to happen, will be limited this year just because of the competition.
It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
A lot of back and forth information, information that had come out regarding the soil moisture conditions in Kansas that would be interpreted very positively.
It's Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien.
Price-wise, negatively in terms of production prospects, the report came out of the USDA on January the 3rd out of the Kansas offices that top soil moisture rated 34% very short, 38% short, and 26% adequate and 2% surplus. So 28% adequate to surplus and everything else. Again, 34 plus 38%, you're looking at 72% short to very short. And of course, the growing crop we have right now would be winter wheat. You can see this same situation on our moisture maps, drought monitor maps. It's really a dry situation. And these numbers aren't looking at the area up to the north of us where we've got hard red spring wheat, durum wheat, and white wheat concerns also. So some real issues on the positive side in the wheat market. On the negative side, the issue that has concern of wheat producers and their organizations in the state and nationally would be the very low export numbers that we've had so far. And a good chunk of that has to do with high prices and where competitors are in the world markets. I think that the downside that just occurred is casting off concerns we've had in the last couple of weeks about potential Black Sea region geopolitical issues. I think in the last day or so, we've focused specifically on, hey, we've got really low exports for U.S. wheat so far. And focusing on that and had decided not to look at the factors we were looking at prior to that. Again, looking at Ukraine, Russia, what disruption there could do to export flows and having that uphold the market. So I guess in all of that, we've just got a lot of roiling and uncertainty in the market in the last day or so that's led us to see prices drop a bit of late. So, and when you look at the March contract, it had been at highs almost up to $9, about $8.90, $8.95, something like that. And that had happened in November. We had come down to about $7.75, back up to $8.75 down here on yesterday's close to $7.68.5. Part of the silver lining for those prices coming down like that probably is a trend towards the place where U.S. wheat now will be more attractive to buyers. Each dime that price goes lower, you're potentially going to attract more business. And so it just brings up the question, what would we consider a low wheat price right now? Well, if we're sitting at 768 and a half, and if we don't start giving impetus to some wheat export sales at areas like that, well, where do we need to go? Down to 650? You know, when we were having these types of discussions in past years, we'd have threes and fours in front of those instead of sixes and sevens.
And if you're one who believes nothing cures high prices like high prices,
if you're a hard-bitten old market economist like me, you'd think, well, within the not-too-distant future, we'd start to bring about some sales and to shift that situation around, given that there just aren't that many other places in the world that have wheat available, that have food quality wheat available. Australia has a lot of wheat, but they have a lot of damaged wheat too. That's basically feed quality. So we'll see where all this goes. I think as objectively as I can state it, the overall situation is still tight in the world. And we've had this delay that's probably temporary based on a lot on high prices. Well, now that we're moderating prices, let's see where we're at in the next 1 or 2 weeks.
It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight, simple, sold.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And obviously, in terms of interest rates, you read the textbooks. If you did any of this when you were in college or you do it now, interest rates pretty much are supposed to determine currency flow. So if a country has its rates moving higher, you would expect that currency to go higher. So if that currency is the U.S. dollar, you know, how is that going to impact our sales, right? Obviously, I hate to zero in on the dollar in terms of commodity prices and, you know, all the markets that we talk about on a week to week, because I think that's an element. I don't think it's the element, in my opinion, that could really help to dictate whether prices move higher or lower.
So that's Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading in Chicago.
But a stronger dollar, softer dollar, you know, can set the tone. And I guess if the dollar really starts to take off to the upside, because it looks like the Fed's really going to follow through with some interest rate increases to slow things down in terms of inflation, then that would overall probably become a little bit of a headwind for commodity prices, you know. So we'll see how that all plays out. It's all big picture stuff that we don't normally talk about, but it's something that every single day as I read the pages and pages of research that I get through all different clearing firms that we do business through here on my side of the microphone, you know, it's definitely something that is talked about.
So what's ahead for the beef market?
Expectations are for a little bit of a lull in terms of business over the next week or two, starting off this new year, primarily because of a bit of a wait and see attitude in terms of the COVID situation and the post holiday impacts on that may happen. So we'll see if that works its way into the marketplace. We did have pretty good export sales for beef 2021. Cumulative sales were 1.887 million metric tons. That was up from 936,000 a year ago. So if my quick math is right, we nearly doubled export sales in the year of 2021 compared to 2020. Five-year average is about 853,000 metric tons. So really good there. In terms of the type of business, though, recently we've seen a bit of a downtick in sales to China of our beef. I think they were just 1,200 metric tons or so. So it could be that Brazil is back online as a potential seller to China, and that might be one reason why it fell off a little bit. It could also be it was end of year type of situation there in China too. So it'll be really important to watch, you know, how those export sales move along going forward, but also who's buying. And it would be good to see China as a continued buyer. That said, to my point earlier, you know, we talk about the big macro stuff, but also we need to watch the stuff that happens on a week-to-week basis. And this is the time of year when weight gain can be decreased by cold temperatures. And that's exactly what I see happening right now as we speak, being that these Arctic temperatures are moving back into, you know, prime region for cattle land, shall we say, Tuesday and then for a few days. But after that, the colder air is supposed to move out. And actually for the month of January, middle to the end of the month of January, we're looking for, I think, relatively warmer than normal temperatures. So it might catch a bid from weather in the near term here, and then I think that that'll be something that kind of acts as a bit of a bearish element. So net-net, to my point, I think we're in a nickel range. I don't really see what's going to push us out of that at the moment, but I like where it's pricing right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Did you know that the world-famous Café du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
This is Agriculture Today.
The other thing beyond simply supply and demand, how many ships are there, how much cargo is there to move, aside from that simple supply and demand dynamic, we also have to consider ship efficiencies. How fast are the turn times on these ships? How fast can a ship load, get to its foreign destination, unload, and return again?
So that's Jay O'Neill with O'Neill Commodity Consulting on supply demand, not the only driver of shipping rates.
And of course, in the current markets, we have about 16% of the world global dry bulk fleet tied up waiting to unload at various ports around the world. And in fact, 6% of the dry bulk fleet is currently sitting outside a Chinese port waiting to unload. So that creates an inefficiency that requires more ships to carry the same amount of cargo. And this is the result. Going back to January of this year, of 2021, we see that daily hire rates in the Capesize market started off slightly below $20,000 a day and steadily rose until you got up to about 3 months ago, as we hit September of 2021, we saw a very dramatic spike up in dry bulk daily hire rates. And the Capesize led that, going up to over $85,000, actually just touching $95,000 at its height. So what happened? Well, grain vessel buyers had to pay whatever they had to pay to find a spot vessel or a 30-day vessel in the market, and they pushed the market up. And as the Capesize market rose, so did the Panamax, Supermax, and the grain-size vessels. Everything followed this dynamic.
And what can we see as far as near-term projections?
This is a chart that shows dry bulk new orders, new vessel orders. And you'll see, particularly since 2013 moving forward, we haven't been building a large number of vessels. The global fleet has not grown very rapidly, again, due to poor profitability, lack of need to grow. And now if we look at projections, as we look at estimates of what's going to happen from 2021 into 22 and 2023, we see that projections, different various markets are projecting that cargo demand will grow at roughly 7% this year, while the net growth in the fleet will only be about 2.7%. And next year, we'll also should see cargo demand growth grow at 2 or 3% higher than fleet growth. And 2023, same scenario. If global economies continue to grow, it's likely that that cargo demand will grow more rapidly than the fleet. And the reason for this is any vessel owner today who wants to build a new ship and puts an order in to build a new ship with a yard in Korea or Japan or China is going to get the response get in line. Right now, shipyards around the world have a 2-year backlog of container vessels and tanker vessels to build. There isn't the capacity to build too much in the way of new dry bulk. So it is a situation where dry bulk orders have to get in line. There's probably a 1 to 2 year waiting period before that ship will be constructed. And it'll be another year or two before that ship is completed and delivered. So there is a lag time for anything that is ordered this year or next year. We won't see it on the water for 2 or 3, possibly 4 more years. And that's a concern to this market.
It's Agriculture Today.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So these guys, they're Microsoft Excel-based, meant to be user-friendly. Ultimately, the real goal is to provide a tool that producers can easily pull up and adapt. Think about it as a starting point where you put your own cost of production or expected sale price numbers in. And we do them separately by species. So they're updated annually. They were done here just right after Christmas. So there's a set for beef cattle, a set for dairy cattle, a set for swine, a set for sheep. Robin Reed and Dustin Pendle are those kind of with the Nagy kind of camp that help me with different components of that. And then there's several of our colleagues over in animal science that help us kind of ground the nutritional, what's presumed in the feed ration and the like, that's underneath those guides. They're updated annually. They were just updated.
So Glenn Tonser is a livestock economist at Kansas State University on some updated tools for producers.
They bring in USDA projected prices, futures market projected prices, and the like. But I really encourage people to, A, know they've been updated, but B, to download them and use them, you know, maybe cross-check against their own numbers. And if you have a good handle on your cost of gain and the like, it's an easy tool you can plug your own numbers in to get a little more tailored insight to projected break-evens for the upcoming year.
And what's on the radar for 2022?
A couple supply, a couple demand, and at least one political or industry relation point here for everybody. We certainly are in the point in the cattle cyclone discussion to where the herd has stopped growing. Exactly how much it's going to shrink and exactly how many fewer animals we harvest in the next few years is going to be the discussion on the supply side. So everybody's expecting shrink, but how much shrink is what to watch. We'll get an updated indicator of that in the January cattle inventory report. So here at the end of the month, the heifer retention numbers and the like by state will come out. I personally think the herd has shrunk, but maybe not as much as some others. We got to keep in mind it's a big industry. Not all parts of the country have had drought pressure. That's not to say I don't empathize with those that have, but there's certainly parts that haven't. Similarly, we have the indication that more near term here for 2022, big cattle slaughter might be down another 3% compared to 2021. And that, coupled with some other things I'll get to on demand front, is leading to higher cattle price expectations. We alluded to this earlier, but fed cattle might be up 8% for the year. Feeders might be up $10 for the year. So there's reasons for optimism from an output price perspective. A key reason beyond just supply for that is the demand story. Mm-hmm. So every time you've had me on for at least 12 months, we've talked about overall demand strength. I'm optimistic that the export demand strength will persist. We probably won't have year-over-year growth the way we've had it, but I hope we can hold some of that strong, you know, billion-dollar sales in some months kind of numbers. Something in that arena would definitely help the aggregate industry. So we can watch for that here as 22 progresses a little closer to home. I suspect we're towards the end, or maybe we are past, the vast majority of residents getting federal aid in the spirit of COVID relief. Exactly what that does to the amount of cash that's on hand, and again, disposable income for higher protein purchasing, is worth watching. We're in the midst of an ongoing discussion of another COVID variant. I'm not an epidemiologist, but we're probably going to have more variants of some sort as 22 progresses. The relevance there is that adds continued domestic uncertainty on the retail versus food service balance and foot traffic and the like. So I think we're starting the year certainly with supply fundamentals that are helpful and demand fundamentals that are helpful, but I think there's more and more uncertainty growing on the demand front of the two. The final nugget for everybody to think through, the question mark, is will inter-industry debates subside? Anybody that's been awake for the last 18, 24 months recognizes there's a lot of what you could label infighting within the vertically connected beef cattle industry. Lots of discussion about how many plants, what plants will be opened, what's the role of the federal government in subsidizing or incentivizing those and the like. Partly as cattle prices come up, that'd be a natural thing for an economist to expect.
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonser. It's Agriculture Today.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
For the better part of a century, Capital Farm Credit has partnered with farmers, ranchers, agribusinesses, and rural landowners. We're the largest rural lender in Texas, and our members share in the profits with one of the strongest patronage programs in the country. We return almost 100% of our earnings, which helps you with the cost of borrowing. Let us share profits with you. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We just introduced this year the world's first herbicide-tolerant forage that includes our iGrowth herbicide tolerance to EmiFlex herbicide. Just launched that this year. We're seeing a lot of potential, a lot of growth in the forage sorghum market, both in this area and in other areas of the country as well.
Dean Loftus is marketing lead for Advantis Seeds North America.
In this last 2 years, we've had two major firsts for the U.S. market, and that would be the iGrowth herbicide tolerance. Last year, we introduced that in grain sorghum. It's the first on the market, the first commercially available herbicide-tolerant grain sorghum. This year, as I just mentioned, we have the herbicide-tolerant forage sorghum. But yes, these are years, not only are they years in development, they have been proven overseas in other markets already. That's where they were bred, and they have been sold successfully in other markets. And we bring Advanta enables us to bring the best genetics that will work in the U.S. from other parts of the world, and vice versa. It works this way. We have different traits and different things here that other parts of the world can utilize. So that enables us to have access to all this great technology, some of which is already proven in other parts of the world that we can now introduce and have introduced to the U.S. market.
So why are we seeing an increase in sorghum acres?
Speaking of sorghum's fit, and you talked about it earlier, how it's growing interest, China and other parts. Well, there are so many agronomic things about sorghum that are so attractive to many growers now and are making them change their minds or alter their plans to either switch to sorghum or at least include it in the rotations. And a lot of it's agronomic things, the price and availability of water. Do I need to say much about the fertilizer, the price of fertilizer? Sorghum uses less water, less fertilizer, less inputs overall, and that's really making it an attractive option. You know, there's many growers who are switching some of their corn acres to sorghum for this. Could be forage sorghum, you know, on dairies and different things. So, yeah, I think the agronomic characteristics of sorghum, they've always been there. But I think now all the conditions are hitting at once to make it very attractive to get sorghum growers or other growers like corn growers to consider growing some sorghum and switching to it or at least getting it into their mix.
There are numerous warnings concerning supply chain disruptions and the lack of availability of certain chemicals in 2022. But Loftus says,
we have definitely heard from many people that that is an issue, right? The great news when it comes to iGrowth, and it comes specifically to EmiFlex, which is our parent company's herbicide that we use with iGrowth, called EmiFlex, we have no supply chain issues. We have a full supply of EmiFlex that can go on every acre of our iGrowth grain sorghum and forage sorghum. So no issues there at all. And we've been hearing that as an advantage from many of our customers or soon-to-be customers who are considering it.
On why now may be a turning point for growers.
The agronomic characteristics of grain and forage sorghums are now really becoming a benefit for growers all over because of the less inputs primarily involved with sorghum products, as well as the iGrowth herbicide tolerant, which now gives growers that over-the-top and post-grass control option that never existed in grain sorghum or forage sorghum, but now does, and you can get it from Alta Seeds right now.
Dean Loftus with Advantis Seeds. It's Agriculture Today.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
For years, cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from America. You can depend on NextGen varieties for performance and yields year after year. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Oh, and one other thing. AmeriCod is now offering cotton seed treatments to protect your seed investment against your early season challenges. To find out more, contact your local NextGen representative or seed dealer today. AmeriCod. All we do is cotton. All the time.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The folks at the Agriculture Department's Risk Management Agency would like more corn growers to split up applications of fertilizer throughout the season instead of just putting it all on at once at planting time. Because if you do that,
then you have a greater chance of rains washing some of that away and losing its effectiveness.
And with the prices for fertilizer, that could amount to a lot. So Risk Management Agency Administrator Marcia Bunger is promoting something new this season called PACE.
Post-application coverage endorsement.
This extra endorsement is designed to protect producers against losses in yields when weather prevents them from delivering that second or third fertilizer application. This endorsement right now only available for non-irrigated corn in select counties in 11 states. Like we said, it's a pilot program new for 2022. The last day in most places for purchasing your crop insurance and this new PACE endorsement, March 15th. For more information, go online, search RMA Conservation. Gary Crawford, Washington.